faces a choice. This is Battleground America. Here's Tara Servatius.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Insane Things Podcast, where we wrap up the week that was. If you've had a busy week, this is a great way to catch up while you run your errands over the weekend. Let's dive right in. Insane Thing number 7.
Are you still talking about Jeffrey Epstein? This guy's been talked about for years. You're asking, we have Texas, we have this, we have all of the things. And are people still talking about this guy, this creep? That is unbelievable. Do you want to waste the time and do you feel like answering?
I don't mind answering.
I mean, I can't believe you're asking a question on Epstein at a time like this where we're having some of the greatest success.
And with that, he tanked the best 2 weeks probably that ever was in an American presidency in the modern era, except maybe when the Berlin Wall came down. Badly underestimating the extreme backlash by our side. I've never seen anything like it. Everyone united. And over and over and over again, resign trended on X. People were going after Bondi. He should have left it that way. But when he interrupted her right there at that press conference, he owned it. People couldn't believe it. You're going to let pedophiles off the hook? This was massively gaffetastic. The problem entirely created by Team Trump, who in the beginning of the presidency hyped and hyped and hyped the release of Epstein's stuff. Then didn't deliver, blamed an FBI special agent in charge, the New York district, threatened him to either resign or they'd fire him. He walked out the door of his own accord and then fed us a memo that said, no, Epstein abused all the girls himself, hundreds of them, nothing on the videos, nothing to see here. Ignore the list. We're not releasing it. Besides, it might make innocent people look guilty. Just trust us. We're sealing it forever. Oh, by the way, here's a video that proves Epstein killed himself, too. We're done here. Nobody was buying it, in part because all the old clips of people around Trump started resurfacing, and they were pretty damn convinced that they had and or knew who these Johns were, something we're now not supposed to believe ever happened. For instance, here's the most damning. Alina Habba, Trump's personal attorney, but also the White House counsel at the time, she said this to Piers Morgan 3.5 months ago.
We have flight logs. We have information, names that will come out.
Is it going to be shocking?
I don't see how it's not shocking that there were so many individuals that were hidden and kept secret and not been held accountable. Let's talk about the reverse. I believe in accountability. So you have to now go through your process. Now, I won't say they're guilty until they go through their time in court. But again, now it's time for accountability.
She wasn't the only one. Clips of Kash Patel, now the FBI director, deputy director Bongino, swearing up and down there's a list. They know all about it. This was particularly devastating. Came out today. Clips from Donald Trump's other personal attorney, Alan Dershowitz, once accused of being one of the Johns. He went through a long legal process to clear his name. He says, bull. He's seen the Epstein docs. He even knows who the Johns are.
So let me tell you, I know for a fact documents are being suppressed and they're being suppressed to protect individuals. I know the names of the individuals. I know why they're being suppressed. I know who's suppressing them, but I'm bound by confidentiality from a judge and cases, and I can't disclose what I know. But I hand to God, I know the names of people whose files are being suppressed in order to protect them, and that's wrong.
Just out of curiosity, without names, are these politicians, business leaders, both?
They're everything.
Things got even worse when they included the Epstein prison video, which they insisted proved he'd killed himself. Case closed there, too, they say, by the way. They're done. They're not going to do any more research. And it turned out that that video, which focuses on two cell doors, yeah, one of the doors is a supply closet. The other one is not Epstein's cell. In fact, an inspector general's report found that the video camera that was supposed to be recording Epstein's cell mysteriously died, failed to record. So what was that video they showed us? The one with the 1 minute missing? It was a crock, basically. I mean, yeah, if you were going in there to kill Epstein, you might have crossed that screen, or you could have just come up the other stairwell, gone into Epstein's cell for 2 hours, come out with two black eyes and covered with blood, and no one would have been able to see you. They kind of didn't mention that. So folks, they could have simply said, look, we don't know. Maybe this evidence was destroyed. I mean, there's a million other things they could say, but to do this, to gaslight and hose the public like this, it just didn't fly. There were demands for Bondi's resignation from people as disparate as Alex Jones to Glenn Beck to Laura Loomer to Eric Erickson. Even huge Trump supporter Tom Fitton of Judicial Watch utterly disgusted.
I read the memo 3 or 4 times again this morning, and it's really, I don't think even the Biden administration would have written anything like this. I just don't think they could have thought they could get away with it. And I got to wonder what is going on at the leadership of the Justice Department and the FBI to allow them to think that statements like as follows. This is a classic. Of course, we're suing for this stuff, right? They say systematic review revealed no incriminating client list. So there's a client list, but it's not incriminating. So therefore, you can't see it.
Fitton announced by the end of the week, he's suing them for all of it, everything. But the craziest reaction had to be that of Jim Hoft over at the Gateway Pundit, who published this headline, wait, what? If there was no Epstein client list, then why did New York courts refuse the Gateway Pundit's legal request for the list based on an anonymous John Doe who was on the list? That's right, they were the first to FOIA this stuff by their lawyer, Mark Randazza. And with the court was filed on behalf of anonymous John Doe, who claimed to be on the client list. He was one of the pedophiles, didn't want it released. And the court sided with the John Doe. Why was that? Well, in part because of the government's arguments, i.e. James Comey's daughter's arguments. She spends most of her time when she's not prosecuting Diddy or Ghislaine Maxwell. She was also supposed to prosecute Jeffrey Epstein, except he did not kill himself. Yeah, well, she spends most of the rest of her time, I'm not kidding, fighting these FOIA lawsuits to keep folks from finding out who the Johns were. So an attorney on behalf of one of the Johns filed a case. Comey's daughter argued on the government's behalf for keeping the John and all the other Johns sealed and unreleasable, and won. And the whole point here by Jim Hoft in this piece is, well, then if he's on the list, how can you say if there's no list? Because the courts thought there was a list. Folks, I'm as baffled as everybody else. And like I said, the backlash against Trump here was massive. But that was insane, too. Because normally when there's this big of a backlash against Trump, the Democrats pile on, mock him, demand the release. They were nowhere this week. Yeah, pretty much total silence on the biggest Trump catastrophe. They got nothing. What does that tell you, that it was Republicans wailing on Trump to release this? Insane thing number 6. This article in Axios. Folks, this so far is the article of the year. That's how big of a deal this is. The unbelievable headline was this: Democrats told to, quote, get shot, unquote, for the anti-Trump resistance. 24 House Democrats anonymously interviewed for the Axios story all wanted to tell Axios how they went home on break, talked to their constituents, and all their constituents agree they want, and I quote, blood. They want blood. Time to, quote, break the rules, fight dirty, not be afraid to get hurt. They expect Congress members to be willing to get shot to stop these deportations when visiting ICE facilities or federal agencies. Quote, there needs to be blood to grab the attention of the press and the public. Our own base is telling us that. A fourth Democrat said constituents have told them, quote, civility isn't working, and to prepare for violence, to fight to protect our democracy. Well, literally within hours of calling for shooting and bloodshed, there was some, an Antifa ambush. What were Democrats doing with this article? I mean, look, folks, when 24 congressional Democrats call Axios, this is coordinated. There's two things going on here. They knew the violence was coming because, of course, they're funding it. Don't kid yourself. We'll find it. Right now, the DOJ, FBI, and IRS are going after the funding. We're going to find the funding this time. But they want to make the violence they knew was coming against ICE look grassroots. But they also want to push the grassroots into violence. Hey, everybody's planning to get violent. No, we got to stand up for our shadow voters, our shadow electorate that we've imported. The only way we're going to get to Marxism, so go out and kill them. Everybody else is doing it. And folks, of course, members of Congress are afraid to give their own names, afraid, to be known. But I mean, this is the culture of evil and violence and murder that has seized the Democrat Party. And sure enough, by the end of the week, we had something we've never seen before. Three attempts on the lives of ICE agents by lunatic leftists and illegal immigrants. Do you remember the imagery that came out of the Iraq War and how shocking it was after decades of not seeing real war? And really, Vietnam was not filmed the way the Iraq War was, where we had to go block by block by block in armored vehicles. At any moment, something could explode. Someone could get shot and die. That's what we saw, exactly that imagery out of California this week. Folks, it was so bad, they had to put snipers on the roof in Portland because Antifa kept surrounding the building, blocking the doors with those big rolling trash cans and trying to set the building on fire. It's inevitable. They're gonna kill an ICE agent. And folks, for Congress to file a bill right after the Antifa attempted murder in which a cop got shot, and that bill says that all ICE agents, when Antifa shot the cop, they thought he was an ICE agent. And they stalked them. That's the thing. They stalked them in the parking lot. For them to file a bill almost immediately after that, not even wait a week, demanding they display their state-issued ID prominently. They want them to wear it. What's on your state ID? Your address. So they can find them at home for the ambush in their own driveways. Folks, they've already been stalking their kids online. This is insane. But you know what's going on? I'll tell you what's driving this. Trump just got the funding, the big, beautiful bill for 10,000 of these agents. $170 billion total for border protection and deportation. And 10,000, that's an army. They want to make sure to make it hard for Trump to hire them. They're so afraid these loons will shoot them, kill them, or show up in their living room. Even more insane, when CNN's Wolf Blitzer asked the head of the Democrats in Congress, Hakeem Jeffries, he's the minority leader, hey, you know, you want to condemn this? Gave him a chance to do it. Hey, you know, this article's calling for blood, sir. What did he say? He doubled down and justified it.
Many of your Democratic colleagues are facing angry voters back in their districts. According to Axios, some are even being told they need to be more willing to go out there and get shot when fighting. That was a direct quote, get shot when fighting back against some of Trump's policies. One House Democrat saying, quote, and I'll read it to you, our own base is telling us there needs to be blood to grab the attention of the press and the public. How do you respond to that, Leader Jeffries? Are Democrats not meeting the moment, not doing enough to fight these developments?
Well, we are in a more is more environment in terms of the unprecedented assault on the American way of life and our country that has been launched by Donald Trump and compliant House Republicans.
And that was it. No condemnation. Because as Donald Trump said this week, don't kid yourself, the Democrats are funding all of this. Folks, I've told you for a very long time that we are very much at risk of losing American territory in these blue post-American, post-constitutional cities. And that's what you're seeing on your screen. When you have to send the military in just to do an ICE raid, what are you dealing with? You're having to reconquer territory. That is what you are seeing on your screen, just as I told you years ago on this podcast. You would. Insane thing number five. Despite all this, it's working. Census data is showing that in January 2025, before Trump took office, there were 27.3 million non-citizens living in the United States. By June, they were only 25.7. That's a loss of 1.5 million, some of whom were deported by Trump, but the vast majority of whom are self-deporting. This matches up with the numbers from the New York Post and the New York Times last week that showed roughly a million illegal immigrants had exited the workforce. At the current rate and with the enhanced deportation, that number, according to Real Clear data, should accelerate to about 3 million by the end of the year. That, in turn, is adding up to record wage gains. We've talked about before the largest ever recorded wage gain for blue-collar workers, 1.7% since Donald Trump took office. But it's showing up in other ways.
President Trump's crackdown on illegal immigration seems to be showing up in the jobs data. It's a point that the White House is making. Here's what they said about the latest jobs report. It shows that American-born workers have accounted for all of the job gains since President Trump took office and wages continue to rise. So here are the numbers that they're talking about. Foreign-born employment has fallen by 543,000 since January when President Trump took office. Native-born or U.S.-born jobs have increased by more than 2 million since the month Trump started his second term.
That is a complete reversal of the 12 months before under the Biden administration, where the 12-month change last year was negative 1.1 million jobs. That's the change in jobs, negative 1.1 million jobs for Americans. In fact, Breitbart reports, starting in January 2021, the number of foreign-born people in America holding jobs increased 5.1 million. That's crazy. The key there is self-deportation. If Trump wants it to continue, he needs to stop talking about halting ICE raids or creating special visas for beloved immigrants who've been here 15 years illegally. That's not going to work. If we need some kind of immigrant labor, we'll give new fresh visas to people we vetted who have not broken our laws. But overall, a fantastic job by Trump. And not the only Trump miracles to happen this week. This week, Trump presided over the opening of the first rare earth minerals mine in America in 70 years. The owners of the mine first filed a permit in 2014. But Democrats stood in the way, so did ridiculous energy regulations. Well, folks, if you listen to this podcast for a long time, you know, one of my biggest fears was what the Democrats were intending to do in the second Joe Biden administration, which was declare a climate emergency, which would allow them to use the Lever Act to seize means of production and delivery for food and fuel. This is what communist Marxist authoritarians always do. I was terrified they'd do it, especially since the New York Times were, you know, egging them on. Well, Trump, taking a cue from this, did the opposite. He declared an energy emergency, which allows him to suspend a lot of the regulatory process. He signed an executive order his first day, and by this week, the first rare earth minerals mine in 70 years opened in this country. It is absolutely critical for us to have that for all kinds of weapons tech, servers, AI, any kind of satellite. I mean, we were just going, it was becoming hopeless. I mean, China had sopped up like 90% of the world's rare earth minerals, and we were having to play their games in order to be able to buy them. This will reverse that trend. Also on the property just happens to be a coal mine. It is opening too. This will be the first coal mine to open in America in 30 years. Again, Trump got that done as well by declaring the emergency and cleaning up the regulatory process starting on day one with executive orders. So folks, this is fantastic. If you want to know more about it, I did a longer podcast on it yesterday, complete with sources and links at the end of the podcast. Insane thing number four. As I record this right now, the death toll for the flood in Texas, 121 dead with 170 missing. On our Topic Pulse app this week, we have a subscription to it that's corporate. We pay a lot of money for it to find out what articles are trending. Number one trending article for about a day and a half this week was this just absolute monstrosity written by the Associated Press, packed full of lies about how the flood was, of course, the product of climate change. Extreme weather events, of course, becoming the norm. Well, you know what they forgot to mention? This exact, and it's eerie, this almost exact flood, same river, has happened before. This one wiped away a church camp called Camp Mystic. The other one in the next door county to Kerr County, again, same river, the Guadalupe, incredibly flood prone, back in 1987, wiped away another church camp. Insta-flood, massive footage of water in the wall of water that hit the bus of camp counselors and children trying to escape. This one took place in Comfort, Texas. Folks, after this one, it's insane that another church camp or any camp at all was allowed to be built on the banks of this river.
On Friday morning, July 17th, 1987, the small town of Comfort, Texas became the scene of a heroic rescue and tragic loss. Much of the footage you will see was taped on that day by the banks of the Guadalupe River.
It was the day they were supposed to go home. The more than 300 children at the church camp were awakened early. The river was flooding. If they didn't leave soon, their buses might not be able to leave at all.
And they come in there rushing us up and everything. Telling us get up, get packed and all this stuff. And everybody was asking why. They said we got to get out of here because the river was flowing over.
And we started going around the corner. We would go down the hill, then water started coming in the bus and stuff. We tried to back up, but then the bus got stuck, so they made all of us get out of the bus.
And that's whenever the first wave hit us and started scattering people to different trees.
You can't see the footage, but it's identical to the footage today. Why? That river is extremely flash flood prone. They formed a human chain of over 30 people trying to get to the shore, but 10 of them were washed away, ultimately 10 children dead. Kerr County knew they had a problem on their hands because these floods, they'd happen in the middle of the night. And they even intended to buy a $1 million warning system, but scrapped the whole thing, deciding it was just too expensive. However, somehow this is Trump and the Republicans' fault, according to the Associated Press this week, because in part because of their climate change stance, but also in part because Trump had allegedly cut funding for the National Weather Service. Well, it ended up being that those cuts won't take place till October, and they were actually overstaffed for the event and had warned about it 12 hours before, along with stern high rising water warnings 3 hours before. Problem is, nobody heard them because they were asleep. At the end of the week, CNN's pollster was astonished. Surely what happened in Texas would change people's minds about global warming. Climate change? No. People still aren't buying it.
Are Americans afraid of climate change? And the answer is, Americans aren't afraid of climate change. Climate activists have not successfully made the case to the American people. I want you to take a look here. Greatly worried about climate change. We have data going all the way back since 1989. Look at that. It was 35%. 2000, 40%. 2020, 46%. And 2025, 40%, which is the exact same percentage as back in 2000. Despite all of these horrible weather events, the percentage of Americans who are greatly worried about climate change has stayed pretty gosh darn consistent, which kind of boggles the mind a little bit. Granted, everything that we see on our television screens, our computer screens, the hurricanes, tornadoes, the flooding, but yet greatly worried about climate change, 40% in 2025, the exact same percentage as back in 2000.
What makes that so insane is the 25 years and $722 billion of climate propaganda shoved down the American people's throats, only to end up, well, exactly where we did back when it started. It's the left's biggest, baddest, longest hoax and lie. And so far, thank God, they aren't getting anywhere with it. Insane thing number three. The leadership of the Secret Service is practically begging Iran or whoever to kill President Trump. You can't see it until you look at the week in reverse, and then it just jumps out at you. Let me lay events out as they occurred. It started when Iran issued a series of death threats against Donald Trump. This was right after a newly published book this week came out by Wall Street Journal investigative reporter laying out how there were at least two kill teams hunting Trump during the election, and they likely still are. Around that same time, the news broke that a separate Iranian kill team, this time in Spain, had very nearly succeeded in assassinating the head of the right-wing populist party there. It's modeled very much after Trumpism. After all those things happened, all of this sudden, the number two, who really is a number two, leader in the Secret Service, just has to come out and do an interview saying, oh, by the way, we finally punished six people responsible for Butler a year later. But the punishment was a total joke. 10 to 42 days suspension, they'd be returned to work, and they'd been working this entire time. And then this absolute unmitigated outrage, this quote from Matt Quinn, again, the number two in charge of the Secret Service, quote, we aren't going to fire our way out of this. Dude, a man died using his body, trying to protect his wife and children. Former Secret Service agent Richard Starpoli knew exactly what was going on. This is practically an advertisement to those who want to kill Trump around the globe. Come and get him, especially coming on the heels of the Iranian double tap of assassination threats. It's like, oh, yeah, speaking of assassination, we're wide open here at the Secret Service. Anyway, here's former Secret Service agent Richard Starpoli on Fox News.
Secret Service waits a year, and this is the best they can come up with. If this was a private sector business, they would have fired every one of those people and the additional people who are still in place, the senior leadership of the Secret Service. These people are directly responsible for an epic failure that was carried on live TV throughout the world. And if anyone doesn't think that every member of the Mujahideen, Hamas, Hezbollah, every adversary, everyone sitting in a cave with a tablecloth on his head wasn't watching what went on and how unprotected the U.S. Secret Service left them.
Yeah, that was a point to let them know that. They're practically dangling Trump in front of these people like bait. But then it got so much worse. Real Clear Investigations, they do incredible work, broke this story that the six people punished weren't even those who were in charge. One was a whistleblower who went to Congress and let it out of the bag that they essentially drew the rooftop out of the security plan and did know security despite it being the best vantage point in the entire area. For turning whistleblower, he was punished. The other five were low-level people who didn't really have a lot of experience. They were the ones who were brought in because the regular experienced people were let off for that weekend. Now listen to this. The key supervisors who signed off on the outrageous Butler security plan and the two who were on the final walkthroughs, get this, were never disciplined. Instead, they got huge promotions. Folks, and this is causing big consternation inside the Secret Service. There's been a lot of, apparently, resignations over it as people throw their hands in the air. They're just very, very frustrated. Listen to this. One of the supervisors on the final walkthroughs, Nick Menster, was assigned this year as the number two in charge of Lara and Eric Trump's protective detail. That was a big promotion for him, Real Clear Investigations wrote. The other, Nick Olszewski, ironically, listen to this, became the chief special agent in charge of the inspection division, which is responsible for ensuring the accountability and integrity of operations and the agency's personnel. Now, that happened under Biden. So what this means is, yeah, you made Trump bleed. Yeah, did a good job. You almost got him killed. Promotion for you. She writes, inexperienced agents positioned for failure and a more senior agent who spoke out about the ambiguity about the AGR roof coverage, according to Secret Service sources, are taking the fall. Worse yet, Trump's pick for Secret Service Director Sean Curran was in charge of the Trump detail at the time, and Menster served under his command. And this is incredible, folks. Just pray for this man. I really hope somebody takes this Real Clear Politics article and puts it in his hands, because I'm afraid he's not going to make it to the end of his presidency. The good news is Trump won a major Supreme Court decision earlier in the week, 8-1, that'll allow him to begin to fire large swaths of the federal government. And as of Friday, they were already talking about beginning the major firings at the FBI. I hope they go through with them. Folks, they need to wipe out the entire top of the Secret Service, too. Again, he's not going to survive. And I'm not sure members of his family will either. Because to me, this week, it looked almost like the leadership of the Secret Service was mocking him. Insane thing number two, God promised us in the Bible that those who hunger and thirst for justice will be satisfied. He wasn't real clear about the time frame, though. And he didn't really address statute of limitations, which on most of James Comey, former FBI director, and former CIA director John Brennan's crimes, the statute of limitations has expired. In fact, there's very little left to get them on, but there still is something. This week, the FBI and the CIA made their first real moves toward holding them accountable. Folks, I never thought I'd see any day like this. But it's true. This week, after an investigation, CIA Director John Ratcliffe referred James Comey and John Brennan for prosecution to the Department of Justice, officially launching their criminal investigations for lying to Congress. Basically, what happened was the whole Russia collusion hoax was predicated on this idea that there was this secret intelligence community document and everybody had seen it. 17 intel agencies agreed it was really bad. Trump was all but a Russian agent. And Putin was trying to get him elected, and that together they'd launched a coup to take over America. Well, folks soon found out about the Steele dossier and how fake it was, and how the intelligence in it was fake and paid for by Hillary Clinton's campaign. So naturally, Comey and Brennan were both asked by Congress, hey, is the Steele dossier the basis for this intelligence document? You know, the 17 intel agencies say under oath. They said, no, of course not. It's not even in there. Well, it was, and it was, making that perjury, which carries up to 5 years in prison when you do it before Congress. Folks, if you're a leftist this week and you still think the Russia collusion hoax is real, you need to be medicated. You need to see somebody, get some help, because your heroes lied to you. There's no criminal charge for lying, but John Brennan would tell this same lie for 2 years straight on CNN. And since he was the head of the CIA, he was awfully credible. Convinced an entire generation of Democrats that they were living through an attempted coup. Ned Ryun nailed the significance of this on Fox News. And by the way, after years of the Democrats and Democrat media telling us nobody is above the law, headline, New York Times. Yeah, no, Trump's just going after Comey and Brennan because they're his enemies. Well, what was it when Biden was doing it? Anyway, here's Ned Ryun nailing the significance of this.
There's going to be people on the left and the corporate propagandists who are going to start screaming, this is political revenge. This is about settling political scores. That has nothing to do with any of that. This actually has to do with restoring the rule of law and the equal application of the law. You know, John Brennan, of everything that we're seeing now, went out of his way to include the fake Steele dossier, which he knew was fake, in that 2017 ICA. To legitimize that document so it could be justifiably used to target the duly elected president of the United States, Donald Trump. And then James Comey and Andrew McCabe and James Baker, who was the general counsel of the FBI, knowingly used the fake Steele dossier, not once, not twice, four times, to secure those FISA warrants to backdoor spying on Donald Trump. This is a gross and egregious abuse of power and of trust, and I would consider highly illegal acts. And so for me, Laura, this isn't just about the present. In many ways, this is about who are we going to be 20 years from now? The American people have lost a lot of confidence in our institutions, and the way that you restore trust is to actually have consequences for the wrongdoing that has been, I think, pretty obvious over the last 10 years.
Finally, insane thing number one, a story you might not have even heard about this week because the week was so insane, but it is the single most insane story. We've been on this story in one form or another for 5 years in the Battleground America podcast, the absolute homicidal partnership between Anthony Fauci, the Democrat Party, Hunter Biden's Meta Biota, Echo Health Alliance, the Pentagon, which pumped $50 million into the Wuhan lab. Think about that. China did not have the technology needed to weaponize COVID, so the Pentagon paid for them to develop it, while Anthony Fauci and Echo Health Alliance oversaw the transfer, and Metabiota went to work in the lab on the disease that would ultimately put Hunter Biden's father in the White House. Kind of weird, since Metabiota was almost entirely funded by Hunter Biden's Rosemont Seneca. Oh, the connections. Meanwhile, you should know this. We got another piece of the puzzle this week, and it's as horrifying as it is homicidal. 1 million Americans are dead of COVID, more than 10 million dead in the world through 2023. 21 million total is the National Center for Infectious Diseases final number. And what little demons could this be who also facilitated this? USAID. This is a jaw-dropper of an investigative piece. Apparently, these evil little hacks transferred 11,000 samples from the Yunnan province, where some of the closest relatives of the COVID-19 virus circulate, to the Wuhan lab. The media never uses the proper name for the Wuhan lab, or description, I should say. It is the foremost bioweapons lab of the People's Liberation Army of China. This is treason. And it turns out, through the $210 million predicted program that was created and sponsored and run by USAID, they paid the Chinese to transfer, to gather and transfer the samples from the bad caves to the lab. These samples were, of course, deadly, but they didn't apparently give a damn because there was no plan to secure them of any kind. In fact, not securing them must have been the plan. I don't know. But fall down on your knees and praise God that USAID has now been shut down by Donald Trump and by Elon Musk. The shutdown was strongly condemned by George W. Bush and Barack Obama this week, while the media spun lies about how 11,000 people have died of tuberculosis because of it. But I prefer to think of it this way. Truly, USAID was one of the single most evil agencies on the entire planet. And being shut down means millions of people won't have to die. And this is just one example. You consider the billions they transferred to Hamas, to the Taliban after Abbeygate and the 13 being killed. It was like if you were willing to kill an American, they'd send you some cash. The place was truly evil. But this, folks, this is beyond the pale. These documents showing again that USAID funded the exportation of 11,000 samples from the Yunnan province. And with, again, no apparent plan for ensuring the samples were not misdirected to bioweapons or that they remained accessible to the U.S. government. Folks, this is treason. And we need criminal investigations to find out who did this, because as long as they're out, they may reenter government at some point and become homicidal again. Incredibly, while Fauci has been paraded like a poodle before the American people and blamed for so many years, the person who he only sent $6 to $9 million to the Wuhan lab via Echo Health Alliance. But the people at the USAID who funneled over $52 million in there, we still don't know their names. And the people at the Pentagon, same number, over $52 million. We still don't know their names. They are a danger to every human on this planet every day they remain in their positions or are not put behind bars. We must find them now.
Battleground America with Tara Servatius. Please subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Share with friends, family, and other free thinkers. Thanks for listening.